Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, and welcome back to the Beer Ladies podcast. Today, I am going to be your host, and we are talking all about winter warmers. It really has gotten to the time of year where we need some winter warmers. It is chilly outside. Not like snowy chilly, just Irish horrible chilly. Today, I am joined by Tandy and Lisa. Say hello.
Hello. Hello, hello.
Yeah, they're looking cozy. Lisa's got a lovely hoodie on, and so has Tandy. So before we jump into our episode, I'm going to invite you to like, subscribe, share all our social medias. We are on all of the podcasters. We're Beer Ladies Podcast. We have our website, beerladiespodcast.com. We're on Twitter. We're on Mastodon. We are on Facebook, Instagram. We are everywhere. So that said, let's go to what are we drinking? Let's start with Lisa.
So I've gone Belgian. I have a Daranka Père Noël, which is their exceptional Xmas beer. So we're all in. We're all in on that. This is a beer, and I was saying before we started, I probably have this like once every 3 or 4 years. I forget about it in between, and then it reappears. I happen to find it at one of our local bottle shops. So it's very warming. I'll say that 7%, and it's a 7% you feel. So it's a sipper, but perfect for a chilly night like this.
Ooh, that sounds nice. Mm. And Tandy, what are you drinking?
Right, I've got 8 Degrees Brewing. It is an oak-aged barley wine. Just show the can over there. Ooh. For those watching. It's even bigger than yours, Lisa. I see you and raise you. 12.2%.
Oh,
yeah, very big. So also going to be a sipper. But I've been saving this one specifically for this episode because I don't typically drink such big beers. They're often too much for me, but I'll tell you what, there is something about, as you say, cold weather, sipper of a beer. It almost feels like you're drinking a whiskey as opposed to like a beer. Mm. But yes, that's how I'm treating this one. So a nice slow burn and oak-aged barley wine. Thank you, 8 Degrees.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Very nice. And our 8 Degrees are they've called it a day, have they? Or did I make that up?
I want to say they've been put up for sale in the original. Okay. Folk had all, I think, exactly that moved on. But I could be wrong about that, but I think they are on the block, as it were.
But they were great. They were great in the earlier days of, well, kind of the mid days after you had the porterhouses and the O'Hara's, you know, there was the little middle section. So what I'm drinking is, let me show you the can, Lochgill Shield. Can you see this?
Ooh. Oh, yes.
There we go. It is a Irish whiskey barrel-aged imperial oatmeal stout with coffee. There we go. Ooh. That's a mouthful.
Yum.
And it is 12%. Ooh. And it's aged in barrels from the Bowen Distillery.
Ooh.
there we go. I was in Sligo with work at the weekend. So I was like, hey, where can I pick up Lochgill beers? And so they steered me to Foley's off license where they had the whole range. It was great.
Oh, amazing.
So
oh,
I picked this one up specifically for the episode because I love a coffee.
And I love the artwork on that series where they've got different sort of artifacts. There's the Torque one. There's a shield you've got.
Ohm?
I recall the other. Oh, yeah. There's an Ohm one. They're really, really lovely artwork. It's nice to see them, you know, picking up a sort of heritage theme and making it just really very modern and beautiful.
Exactly. Yeah. And winter warmers. What are winter warmers?
Well, and this is the thing. It's such a catch-all, isn't it? Because we have Christmas beers, we have winter warmers, and it all gets a little bit muddy. And I think we can do some myth busting. So as per usual, I'm putting on my myth busting hat. If I'd been smart, I'd have got like a Santa hat or something, and I could have put on a physical myth busting hat. But alas, couldn't find one. So I think we'll start with winter warmers because this is one where at least there's a little bit more more of a paper trail, if you like, to say what they are and what they are not. But again, having said that, it's one of these things where if you call it one, is it one? Just by default, it's winter and it might make you feel warmer. So anyway, but that said, the first beer that we can actually see labeled as a winter warmer is actually Young's Burton Pale Ale. They changed the name of their normal Burton Pale Ale in 1971 and said, it is a winter warmer. So as far as I'm aware, no change to the recipe. They just realized that particular style of beer was not really selling anymore at that point. So they said, ooh, what if this is a winter beer? And again, as per usual with any kind of British beer history, shout outs to Martin Cornell, Ron Pattinson, who have done the work on looking into this, but especially when a shout out Ron, who went to see, you know, exactly how these were made and what was in those original Burton ales that then get rebranded. We have pale malt and American six row, basically equal portions, some flaked maize. So that might surprise people potentially that was in there. Bit of sugar, bit of caramel, and again, more for coloring than anything else, and lots of golding hops. So we're looking at very English hops, you know, kind of the more, I'd say more low key, if you like. But again, when you're hearing that, I think, and I can see Tandy, the wheels are turning, you're thinking this is going to turn out kind of sweet. It's going to be, you know, a little bit heavy, you know. But I think especially, you know, when you get that sugar and you get that little bit of the maize in there, you start to get kind of a, I don't want to say viscous, but I think you get, you get a feel in there.
I feel like maize actually thins out the body.
I could, Yeah.
And so like you'd normally see maize in things like lagers because I mean you get a little bit of that sort of corn flavor, but
I get that sweetness body wise that makes sense.
Yeah it normally thins out the body, and sugar would often be added. Well, I mean, you can add sugar to any beer, but often it ups the alcohol without upping the malty flavors. So for me, this pale ale sounds as if it might be actually a little bit thin, sweet, and maybe not at all what I would expect from something I would think of wintry, or even a pale ale.
Well, and I think, again, what do we mean by these things is really important too. But again, thinking about this caramel for coloring, because I think we think of these winter beers as darker, heavier, again, whether they are or not, they may be strong, but not sort of a heavy mouthfeel at the same time. Although certainly like a barley wine like you've got is going to be a much more, have a bit more oomph to it. And certainly Katie, yours will be too. But I think it's interesting that we have that sort of English tradition that's where they just sort of one day slapped a label on it. And again, this will become a theme and said, this is a winter warmer. and they've been, I think there's absolutely been change in the style since then. And again, I think now they tend to be, you know, what people more expect this, you know, sort of almost like a Belgian double in some ways, where you have that candy sugar, you have that darker kind of, and slightly heavier feel, but going, you know, potentially much stronger strength-wise, but all over the place, I think. And then if you look at kind of some of the more recent ones that I think of as just, you know, sort of big church, if you like, Christmas beer, you can have things with like a, you know, ginger in it. You could have, you know, nutmeg, all of these kind of spices as well. People can kind of almost throw whatever they want in, almost like a pumpkin beer. But I've definitely come across Christmas beers, which I'm air quoting, that have all sorts in them. So I think you have this real spectrum of things that are just sort of, we'll say, and I'm just going to look at, you know, hold up my beer where it's not super dark by any means. It's just sort of a caramel, sort of a color, but come from kind of that sort of color range to very, very dark. Again, maybe there are spices in it, maybe there aren't. I feel like that's kind of more of an American thing, specifically putting like whatever spices we've got into the beer. But I think I know I'm being long-winded, but I'll go back first and say there is this tradition, and I know we'll talk about a little bit more of sort of Scandinavian Christmas beers, and a lot of people would love to see continuity from kind of Viking beers, because you have Yule and they brewed special beers for Yule. And I'll invite people to go back to our episode from a few seasons back where we really talked about these kind of beers that the Vikings brewed and you know, the Norse more broadly, and that it was such a big part of hospitality at this time of year. You got in trouble if you didn't do this right, or if you just didn't do it at all. If you were a slacker, you really could get in trouble with your chieftain, your king, for not brewing your Yule beer. But it is interesting that there is this tradition that continues in Scandinavia of releasing Christmas beers this time of year. And again, because people love to see any kind of, you know, longstanding tradition, they're like, oh, it goes back to the pagan roots. It doesn't. That's lies. we see this. There's a little bit of it in the late 19th century. And then there's some of it in kind of the 1930s and 40s, but it really kicks off from the 1950s onwards. But that said, it has become this tradition. And there, especially, I know we're going to talk a little bit about some of the Danish ones. And I have a lot of colleagues in Denmark, so I was trying to get up to speed on some of these. But lots of local beers, lots of beers that are kind of nationwide there. And I think there is a really fun tradition that we can all kind of lean into. But again, I'm drinking a Belgian beer. So there's absolutely this Christmas beer tradition. Everyone's just kind of got their own take on it. And I think we like to kind of obscure some of the origins because it makes it a little more mysterious and fun. And people don't necessarily like it when you point out that Stella was originally brewed in 1926 as a Christmas beer because it's a, you know, air quotes, boring lager. But that's... that's exactly where it came from. And you wouldn't think of it now as a Christmas beer because I feel like our tastes and attitude toward that have evolved. But originally it was like, ooh, look at this bright, shiny thing. It is a star. Aww.
And so. I definitely wouldn't consider it a winter warmer.
Definitely not. No. And I think that's maybe an interesting thing too, is I can think of a couple of other strong lagers that are kind of in this space, like a Semi-Klaus, where it's like, whoo, intense, that fits into that kind of winter warming, if you like, category. But yeah, we don't think of like, you know, just a bright, clear lager as maybe a holiday beer anymore. So.
Yeah, not really at all. And I was doing a bit of research for this and I found out all about J-Dag.
This sounds amazing.
What is this now, Katie?
I have these notes. So this is marketing at its best. So like, I don't know if you remember back in the day, Guinness decided to have Arthur's Day.
Oh, all yes.
Over the world. They made up a day for drinking beer, hey. Basically. So, but the Danes are doing it in style. And I have my details over here, so you'll know what I'm looking at. So Tuborg are the brewery that started this whole J-Dag. And J-Dag is the day that they released their Christmas beer, which is Julesbrug, is that pronounced? You're better on your Danish.
My Danish pronunciation is terrible, but again, I will just call out my Danish colleagues and say, folks, you need to tell us about these things. We'll come over if there's a day, you know?
Yeah, so Julesbrug, I think it's like Yule beer, Christmas beer, yeah. That's what it means. There we go. And it is a strong dark pilsner at 5.6%. That's not very strong, but... it's okay.
But interesting that it's in this lager tradition. So
yeah, but it's a dark. It says dark with a licorice and blackcurrant flavor. There we go. Mm. And so on the first Friday of November every year, Tuborg launches its Christmas beer, Julesbrug, whatever I said, and it goes to all of the pubs, and all of the people that are distributing it are dressed in blue Santa suits, and all of the people will wear like blue Santa hats, and they go and they drink all day.
That sounds
how amazing
glorious.
Is that?
That's, you know, very cool.
Nothing wrong with that. I don't know if it comes out on the same day, but I first became aware of this, you know, one, just knowing a bit about the kind of, you know, Yule and you know, related beer tradition, but in Odense, which is, you know, where my work is based in Denmark, they have Albany Brewery, and they have two Christmas beers. And in the local museum, they have a whole lineup of different bottles, like sort of from when they first began, I want to say in the 1960s. But again, they're lagers. So, you know, they're kind of the local Carlsberg, if you like. They still have kind of your standard, you know, regular plain old sort of dull lager, but then they have another, a whole other series of interesting beers, but they have two Christmas beers. So they have, and I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, but they have Blaulis and Rødhede. I'm trying really hard, but they're both dark lagers again. So one stands for blue light, Danish for blue light. So again, this blue, and the other one is Red Riding Hood. So also kind of a reddish dark lager, but I have been told that these are actually fantastic beers. People are really excited about them every year. Even people who aren't normally into beer kind of go and pick some up. And, you know, these are about, the one is 7% and the one is 5.5% thereabouts. But I love that the label on one of them has a picture of the tower from the brewery covered in snow. And it's a beautiful brewery if anyone gets a chance to go there and visit. But because of that labeling, people called it the church beer because it looked like a stained glass window. But then that was kind of the only Christmas beer available locally. But then, as you say, Katie, like Tuborg was suddenly everywhere nationwide. But I think people do have this this fondness for their local brewery and kind of always have. So I've seen the Albany ones, and hopefully people will be putting a couple bottles aside for me for next time I get out to the office. So yeah.
I just think we should do a beer ladies trip to Denmark for the first Friday in November some year.
Done. Yes. I can find a work excuse. This could happen. Yeah.
Oh. I'm in.
We're on. Okay.
So
all in, yeah.
So help maybe a more newbie person out, but what is the difference, let's say, between a winter warmer and a Christmas beer? Or is there a difference? Are they different things?
I think it all depends on your point of view. So I think winter warmers, we can say so many things now call themselves winter warmers that, you know, we can look at those original beers that were basically the Burtons, but that got relabeled as kind of one distinct tradition. And in fact, this is another interesting thing that a lot of the early, and again, early, we're talking late 19th, early 20th century, Belgian Christmas beers were just British beers that were imported. And again, they were kind of in this broad style category, we think. There's actually not anything sort of definitive, but it's interesting that that might've always been kind of the idea of what one of these looked like. So is that still a winter warmer? Or again, I think like the ones in America that get called winter warmers often have weird stuff in them. So it's almost become this sort of nonsense term that doesn't quite mean anything. But I do like that a Christmas beer can also be that. So it gets a little muddy. And I don't know that any one definition would be correct. I want to say there is a BJCP winter warmers category,
I was going to bring that up. There is a style. It's called a winter seasonal beer. And it's quite a broad category. So it's not one specific style. It's more like interpret this how you will, but just be explicit about what's in it. So they talk about it being typically a stronger, darker, spiced beer that has a rich body and warming finish. But the base beer can be a porter. It could be a stout. It could be an amber ale. It could be a Belgian triple or a Belgian dark strong or a quad. Like, It could almost be anything. You know, you could be taking a Doppelbock. And I mean, we spoke about Bocks just a couple of weeks ago there. You could be brewing a Doppelbock with some kind of spice element. And, you know, the spice elements that they talk about are kind of Northern Hemisphere winter spices. So cinnamon, clove, vanilla, ginger, cherry sometimes. You know, we talk about that sort of thing, but also reminiscent of things like mince pies. So raisins and currants, those are quite common. Not always from the addition of fruit or spices, but sometimes from the malts. So these can give you those kinds of flavors, which is really cool.
But then actually that brings up a great point. How does that translate, this sort of Christmas or Christmas time beer, how does that translate to the Southern Hemisphere when it's not so cold?
No, not so cold. Hottest time of the year is around Christmas time. And I mean, I can tell you that I used to just spend Christmas kind of like lazing around in the pool, often drinking something like beer shandies, even as opposed to beers, because they would be a bit lighter, spritzier, or even something like Prosecco or, you know, very light things. So if I was in South Africa for Christmas now, I'd be thinking of things like gozers and sours, maybe a weiss beer. You know, I'd be thinking kind of light and easy and citrusy. That's what I sort of think of with summer. But whereas now being in the Northern Hemisphere, I think of cinnamon and gingerbread and Christmas cake and mince pies and pastry and beef and Guinness stew. You know, I think of these things. So it is quite a different thing.
And would breweries in the Southern Hemisphere release seasonal beers and call it Christmas beer, but it's flipped and it's what we would have in the summer called Christmas?
I haven't seen it. Doesn't mean it doesn't happen. But there are a bunch of, there's a bit of a movement, at least in the circles that I played in, for doing a Christmas in July. So my homebrew club back in South Africa did a Christmas in July because that would have been our coldest month. And we dressed up in our Christmas hats and our woolly jumpers. And, you know, you almost have your winter styles in July as opposed to December, Jan. So if anybody was going to brew something wintry like that, I'd expect it to come out then as opposed to being Christmas.
Interesting. So you wouldn't necessarily have like you're saying, like your Christmas goza or your sort of Christmas shandy or
not that I've seen, but you know, that doesn't mean that other breweries around the world don't do that. You know, there's Sierra Nevada that's got their very famous sort of Christmas seasonal IPA, which people queue up for. Well, queue up for is probably a strong term, but people love to get their seasonal every year. And you know, we've spoken about this with pumpkin beers and with all these things that come and go with the season. I think people are just excited by novelty, you know, variety is the spice of life and all of that. So having something seasonal is really cool, even if it's an IPA, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely hoping to get hold of some Sierra Nevada celebration when we're in the States over the holidays, because it is just such a lovely beer. Although then they also have some of their others like Bigfoot and others that feel, again, wintery in air quotes, even though certainly there's lots of parts of, you know, North America that are not so hot in December, depending on where you are. So, you know, so something like maybe almost like a cherry or, you know, sort of raspberry goza might be more, you know, weather appropriate. Fitting. Yeah. If you're, you know, in Baja or, you know, wherever you are. So.
Definitely.
And boozy is another feature of winter warmers, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, I think so. And again, like you were saying before, Tandy, I feel like there's some that I save up for this time of year. And actually, you too, Katie, I think I had one of the other Loch Gill ones for the Late Late Toy Show last year. But it was very late. So anyway, but yeah, it has that, you know, that very boozy kind of quality. And yeah, more like maybe a whiskey or something that you just sip on.
Yeah. You know, put it this way. This is the time of year that I drink a lot of sherry. I love sherry, but I would never be drinking sherry in the middle of summer. It's just not season appropriate. And I think of it as the same as drinking a barley wine. I'd really prefer to drink a barley wine, a really strong stout, a barrel aged anything or an imperial anything. That's for cold weather for me. It's not something I could just drink on any random Thursday in the middle of August. So I think they are quite boozy, but there are other things too that often set these things apart. So for instance, barley wines and wee heavies, you might not have a lot of head on them. So they're typically, you know, they're almost, I'm going to show this to the camera, but they've got no, you know, foam, no head, no lacing. And that's just because of the literal booze content, the malt content, you know, it just can't sustain light and frothy head. So it almost feels more spirit-like as opposed to...
I have a question for you, Tandy. What did you say? A wee heavy? What's a wee heavy?
A wee heavy is a Scottish beer style, and it's the strongest of the... Is it? It's the strongest of the Scottish beer styles, and it is a very malt-forward ale. So it's not very bitter at all, very malty, lots of like rich kind of caramel and you know, almost deep complex caramel to it. Beautiful beer if you can find one. I haven't had one for ages, but yeah. It could be a little bit smoky. So, you know, if you're very sensitive to smoke, give one a try, but they may not all be for you. But yeah, very malt forward, strong ales.
Yeah, I like the wee heavy, but you're right. I'm one of those people who's very, very sensitive to the smoke. So I have to get one that's definitely not in any way smoky, peaty, any of those things,
you do get them. And normally they use specific kind of Scottish yeast. So these would have been yeasts that would have been harvested for many years and used within the breweries there. But, you know, Scottish beers is another one that we should maybe do an episode on.
Maybe do some, you know, field trip, just saying, you know, drink our way through the shillings. Yeah. 60s, 70s, 80s, all that.
Oh, and actually, you know, I wanted to say one more thing, only because I'm drinking a barley wine and it came to mind, but it's called a barley wine, but it's not a wine at all. It's obviously only made with grains, which makes it a beer, whereas wine is made with fruit. So sake is also not a wine, it's a beer, because it's made with rice. But barley wine was only named because of the alcohol content makes it closer to wine. So typically between 10, 12 can go up to 14% sometimes. So it's got wine strength, but made with beer ingredients. And you get a variety of it called wheat wine, which is really just a barley wine, but it's got more of the malt bill is made up of by wheat. So it'll bring those other wheaty flavors, sometimes a little tart, sometimes a little citrusy, but bready and strong. Yeah, strong like a barley wine.
Yeah, and if anyone wants to get more on that, our Rye River episode, we had their wheat wine sort of freshish, if you like, out of the barrel. And that was absolutely that. But you got that very sort of clean taste, but very, very strong, boozy overall, but just a really interesting take on that. Yeah, because I do think that the wheat does set it apart in a way where the barley wine is still much more, it's not that the wheat wine is deceptive, it's still very strong, you taste it, but the mouth feels a bit different.
And wheat sometimes makes things feel a little bit lighter, I think, in your mouth as well. Either that or it can be very creamy, so it can kind of go either way. Whereas, you know, barley, you almost, well, you're sort of middle of the road there. Yeah, but there's so many cool styles. And you know what I think I like in theory or in principle is taking a base beer and just adding like a spice addition to give it a little, I don't know, Christmas cheer or festive cheer. One of the best beers, one of the first beers that really got me into craft beer in general was a beer that I had in Canada. I actually think I've mentioned it on the pod before. It was from some brewery based in Vancouver, not Goose Island, it's another island. Anyway, and they had this winter spiced ale, and it was mind-blowing to me because I'd never tasted a beer that had these kinds of flavors, and it was very cinnamon and vanilla, and now it's probably way too sweet and way too much for me. But at the time, it was a revelation. Like I'd come from sort of light lager country, so it was really different and interesting to me. But I like the idea. I think, you know, as a home brewer, you know, if you're thinking of making something like this, there's so many ways you could do it. Take a brown ale, take a porter, take a stout, take a red ale, take whatever you want and just try and add something to it. I might do something like a brown ale because there's lots of like chocolate flavors in there, and add in maybe hazelnut, maybe a bit of coffee, maybe it becomes a stout. But, you know, there's all these things that you could add into it, whether it's nuts or spices or fruit.
Or even cacao.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I can think the two that always stand out for me, the American ones that both have stuff in them, and I would put stuff because I feel like it changes a bit every year, which is all good. But the two that I always think of is Great Lakes Brewing in Ohio has a Christmas ale where, again, it starts off as just kind of a strong ale, but then they've got all kinds of different spices in it. And I've even seen some places where they'll add like a dusting of something to the top of the beer when you get it, like maybe nutmeg or cinnamon, depending on like how much that's already in the beer. It could be too much, you know, obviously if it's already there, really strong, but that's one that's really, really interesting. Or another one that I would get every year and that I've done kind of vertical tastings of is Troegs Mad Elf, which is a Belgian strong dark ale with cherries. And I'm not always the biggest fan of a beer with fruit in it, but that it's just, again, it's very just complex, rich, fruity, you know, all of those things. But it's all, you know, it's a little bit different every year, but it's got other spices in it too. Like there's allspice, there's again, cloves, mm-hmm. nutmeg, all of these things we think of as Christmassy. And so if you do have the chance to do, you know, one of these vertical tastings where you're, you know, you're looking at ones over the past, say, 10 years and just see how that flavor has mellowed or changed, or maybe sometimes it hasn't mellowed and it's gone not in a great direction, because it can, you know, can go either way. But that one is always really interesting. And I always like to compare, you could also get the Naked Elf where it didn't have the other stuff in it, especially not the cherry. It would just basically be the base beer. And they don't, I don't know if they still do that, but that was something they did do every couple of years. And I'll be honest, I actually always preferred the Naked Elf, just the kind of its own. But again, you're talking, this is a beer that's like 11-12%. It's, you're getting it in a little wee glass, but just fascinating and always a little bit different every year, because it's kind of like our pumpkin beers here, is, you know, always slightly different depending on what's around. So, but that's the thing, exactly like you're saying, you can be so creative, and as long as you're keeping it kind of in check, you don't want it to go in the, you know, the Yankee Candle direction. But
yeah,
not well, just right. Say,
less is more, a little bit subtle.
Absolutely, especially when you've already got a very strong beer. Like that's, you know, it's standing on its own anyway. As long as you've got these things that are complementing it, it's good.
Yeah.
Or it's honey too. Yeah, that's another one to put in.
And maple. I've seen a few of them using maple, and shout out to Ballykill Cavern, because right now they've got a maple and pecan brown ale.
So got one in my fridge. So
they've taken their Bambrix brown, but they've, you know, added kind of maple and pecan, which just sounds glorious. And that to me is probably kind of the quintessential sort of idea of a winter warmer or a Christmas beer. It's not labeled as any of those, but it's the right, it's the feel of it, isn't it?
Yeah. And I like the nuttiness. Like I love that kind of approach as opposed to the fruit, just because I'm not personally a big fruit person, although sometimes it works. But yeah, that's in my fridge. I'm excited about that. But that was actually a question I had for both of you, is I feel like I don't see that many Irish beers labeled as either Christmas or winter warmer or, you know, or winter ale even. I'm sure they exist, but I feel like I don't see that many. And I wonder if that's a sort of conscious thing.
I know White Hag have a Yule Ale.
That's true.
I'm trying to think.
Didn't that one have peppermint though? Last year it did.
And maybe it changes. Yeah. I think I did see it. Yeah. That's a good point though. Yeah. But I feel like I don't see the same numbers of them. You might, like if you go to the UK and everyone and their uncle has a Christmas beer out at the moment, but, or certainly go to the US or Canada. But I wonder, is it just, we don't have the kind of scale for it, or maybe will I find, you know, next week there'll be a whole lineup at the Underdog of all Christmas beers. I don't know.
Are we manifesting again?
Yeah.
It's like, you don't need too many. You just need the right number. You know, you need to have those couple. So I can see why people wouldn't necessarily want to go out, especially these are beers with a lot of ingredients potentially, or expensive grain bill
to make. Yeah. Plus they also, depending on the style that underpins them, they can take a really long time to make and mature. So, you know, if you're a home brewer thinking of making a Christmas ale in the beginning of December, you're already too late. Like, so tip for next year, start brewing this thing in like March and let it age, because these kinds of beers, especially when you get over like 8% ABV, you really want them to sit for a good amount of time to condition and round out the flavors. Because what happens is that they're just too green, or they're too sharp, and you know, they're just too boozy, too warm, and that often happens with new high alcohol strength beers. So don't do that. Rather brew them as early in the year as possible, and then set and forget them, and only open them up at Christmas.
That sounds like a plan.
Yeah, find a barrel.
I would need to plan ahead in order to do something like that, and then it's like
no, it's a pain. I actually think I might do that though, you know, coming now in the next few months. I think I might try and make a bit of a stronger winterier something, and then I'm going to forget about it, because I'm notoriously bad at either bottling on time or not labeling my beers, or, you know, just so many things I do wrong with brewing. And I think if I make this beer, bottle it within a reasonable amount of time, and then put it under my stairs, I'm guaranteed to forget about it. out of sight, out of mind.
Oh God, I don't think I could ever forget where all my beer was stashed.
I don't know. I'm curious if this happens to both of you or either of you. I will do this. Well, I will have a barley wine or something else that's like much stronger that I'm like, I'm not going to drink it this weekend. I set it aside. It doesn't make it into the fridge. And then I open a box, you know, months later, I'm like, oh, these, someone needs to drink these, and then they need to go in the fridge. So, but again, this time of year is when I'm looking for boxes or going through, yes, and then being like, oh, I suddenly have all these high alcohol beers, which again is fine because weather and not going anywhere and sitting inside. But is it just me or does everyone do this? I don't know.
Well, I think a lot like the one that I'm drinking today, I didn't even put it in the fridge because I think it's nicer. Mm. Like it's pretty cool.
Oh, some of them should warm up. Yeah, anyway, that's
so
true. Yeah.
I think it's okay around if it's, as long as you're not, you know, hitting the 20 degrees or whatever. I think.
Yeah.
But I think if you're single digits, I think it's okay to drink them room temperature, to be honest. What do you think?
Even double digits. I mean, you know, things like big stouts and barley wines and, you know, Russian Imperial stouts, these kinds of beers, you want to drink them at about 12 degrees. And I mean, I can tell you that my house is about 14 degrees. So this one never went into the fridge at all. It sat in my cupboard and that's where it stayed. And I didn't put it into the fridge for today. It just came from my cupboard and it's the perfect temperature. It genuinely is. It's lovely.
Oh, that's perfect. So your cupboard is cellar temperature. It's just, it's perfect. Yeah.
Yes. So, well, during winter, yeah, but no, Lisa, in a way, there are some beers that I tend to forget about, but I don't have boxes and boxes of them like I think you do. I've just got one or two that are sitting at the back because I raid my cupboards every weekend.
that's true.
I have my own little compartment in the IKEA Kallax unit, you know, has my,
love
my
a good Kallax, yeah.
Has my beer stash. And then I'm like, oh, those stronger ones, I better stay away from them now if I've got to do something. And then I never get back to them or something. So
Or I'll set them aside for something like the Late Late Toy Show, or, you know, if there's going to be an event, something like that. And, but then again, age or whatever else, I just won't get to it. And then like, so bottle swap is what we need. Just an event. So.
But you know, that raises another interesting one. You know, if you get some of these beers that are 12 or 14%, you know, or even 8%, should you wait or should you drink them straight away? Like, what is the benefit of aging some of these beers? Is there really anything, or is it actually up to the brewer to release it at the right time?
That is a really good question. I think I've definitely had things that I've aged, whether intentionally or not, where some were amazing and some you could then go do that kind of vertical tasting, and others it was like, oops, this was in the back of the cabinet and it didn't age so well. So, but yeah, it's a question of if the beer should be aged, should it just be sitting at the brewery until it's ready, until it's, you know, ready to be a butterfly, or should it be kind of on the consumer to be finding the shelf space for it? It's a really good question. And I think it really depends on the style, on the beer. But even then, sometimes you'll get one where you just maybe get the bad batch, or maybe the good batch too, like, you know, but you've missed its peak flavor. I don't know.
And I'm going to say, on winter warmers, right, you can actually get, like in, we'll say, the German Christmas markets, you get Glühbier, which actual warm beer with all your spices added. And I'm like, I haven't seen that over here, to be honest. I don't know.
And unless you're sitting in Christina's kitchen when she's making spiced ale.
Yes.
Because that seems to be right up Christina's alley. But you can spice or warm wine, beer or cider. I recently tried a mulled cider, guys. I made it myself. It was delicious.
Tell us all about it.
I literally bought the cheapest, worst cider in the world from Lidl. And in my slow cooker, I added sugar and I added cinnamon and ginger and allspice and some citrus peels and some cloves. And I let it sit for the whole day. And then that night had it, and it was warm, apple-y spice. It was like warm apple pie in a sense. It was delicious. And now I'm keen to actually try it with something like a brown ale or something like a red ale. I wouldn't go too hoppy with this now. I'd go more malty. So an Irish red as opposed to an amber ale, or a brown ale as opposed, you know, as opposed to anything IPA like. But I think it's well fun. Christina inspired me, and so I did it, and it's delicious.
Would you do it with a stout or a porter? What about Hope's Dublin Porters? Is not that it's a bad porter, like
it is a gorgeous beer.
It's a good porter, but it's not that strong. It might be nice for that kind of.
I think you could do it with a stout or a porter. You might change it and add a little bit of vanilla essence or hazelnut essence if you've got it, you know, something like that to give it a nuttiness. I think you could absolutely play with it. Now, I am too much of a Grinch to go pouring good beer into my slow cooker. So to be honest, I'd be looking for the sort of cheaper, you know, ones that you can get in 6-packs or 8-packs, because, you know, yeah, that's just me. But, you know, for those who do love to cook and have always said, you know, only cook with the wine that you want to drink, well, then you pour your beer into your slow cooker by all means. It's just not really me.
I wonder, because I've seen some of the different, you know, beers you can mull or have as like the goo beer kind of a thing. But I know there's also kind of a Polish tradition of it, and possibly a Czech one as well. And I wonder if we went to, you know, like the pub here, the Czech pub here, do they do that kind of a thing? I would be curious to find out. And then it's not a beer that I'm warming myself at home, but I wonder if they have that kind of sort of Eastern European, you know, sort of mulled beer tradition. That would be interesting to try. So
that'd be super cool.
I don't know, Pilsner pub, let us know if that's a thing you guys are doing.
I think there's we might
any excuse to go there.
We might have to go on a fact-finding mission. You know,
possibly,
definitely.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I think, have we anything else to say on winter warmers? Have we covered it all?
It can be whatever you want it to be. There we go.
Exactly. And it's okay if it's in the summer and in July, if you're in the southern hemisphere, it's still a winter warmer.
Absolutely.
It's fine.
Absolutely. Oh. Now, actually, before Katie, before you wrap up, I wanted to tell everybody at home that if you haven't already seen, we are going to be doing our very first live podcast recording, which is enormously terrifying, but
we are
also
so excited.
Super exciting.
It's going to be great.
It's very exciting. So for everybody listening that is, let's say, in Dublin or able to get to Dublin for the 12th of January, we're going to be recording live. So all four of us in the same room at the same time, unprecedented, we'll be at Rascals. Thank you, Rascals, for having us. And tickets are on Eventbrite. But if you just go and look at our social media, you'll find all the links everywhere, or go look at Rascals social media, because they've organized the event. Tickets are free and you get a beer when you walk in. So really no reason not to come. 12th of Jan, come and see us.
Yeah, even if you're just going for their gorgeous pizza and gorgeous pints, we'll be there. So, you know, book in, come see us, free pint, nothing to lose. And you can ask us as many complicated questions as you like. So we're here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We might not answer them, but you can ask.
Exactly.
Yeah. And sure, you know, Thursday, January, you're broke. Go for your free beer.
Hear, hear. Yeah, we'll be very gentle. We're very friendly. We don't bite. We would love to hear your questions.
And for those doing dry January, Rascals did say that they would put on a non-alcoholic beer, or at least have some available. So that's also not a concern.
Definitely.
Definitely not. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Something to look forward to after Christmas. You still have something to look forward to. I think that's good.
Yeah, and something affordable. We should really lean into that. So yeah, even if it's, you know, post holidays, you're skint, again, free pint, come have a good time.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then you get the Lewis Hole. You'll be grand. Unless you live in Lucan.
or where I live.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, I think we've come to the end of our episode. I'd like to thank you, Lisa. And I'd like to thank you, Tandy, for all your chats and your interesting knowledge. I, as always, have learned something new, like I do every episode. Please follow us on Twitter. At Beer Ladies Podcast. Pod.
At Beer Ladies Pod.
You swear, you'd think I'd have this at this stage. Sorry. We're on Mastodon. We're also on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube, where you can see our lovely backdrops, backgrounds, our lovely festive backgrounds. We also have our website, and you can still order merch in time for Christmas, actually. I wouldn't leave much longer. And all the links are on our social media and on our website. And you can catch us on all the podcatchers wherever you get your podcasts. So good night for now.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.